From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 21st day of January 2011. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mike Zuzulo of Global Commodity Analytics in Lafayette, Indiana. And later in the half hour, we'll hear what University of Illinois Extension entomologist Mike Gray thinks is in the future for BT corn and resistance management, and a bit from Daryl Good's Farm Doc podcast this week. He took up the usage and acreage functions of the marketplace for corn and soybeans. And as we finish out our half-hour program, we'll talk with Steve Hilberg, the director of the Midwestern Regional Climate Center, about the agricultural weather forecast. And it all happens right here on this Friday edition of the Closing Market Report. The Closing Market Report is a production of Illinois Public Media from the University of Illinois.
This stock and commodity report on Illinois Public Media is made possible with support from Bates Commodities in Normal, providing clients with the latest market information based on research by ADM Investor Services and other independent sources. Bates Commodities can be reached at 1-800-383-4647 or on the internet at batescom.net.
In Chicago on this Friday afternoon, futures in the wheat pit finished higher. The March contract up 21 cents today at $8.24.5. May at 8.50 and a quarter, up 18 and a quarter. In July, the soft red harvest month, 8.66 and three quarters, up 13.5 cents. The March hard red winter wheat in Chicago, rather in Kansas City, at $9 even, up 13 and three quarters. March corn futures back in Chicago now, $6.57 and a quarter, 3 and a quarter higher. The May at 6.67, up 3. July at 6.71 and a quarter, 3 and a quarter higher. September at 6.22 and three quarters, 6.5 cents higher. And December corn futures at $5.87 and a quarter, up 11 and a quarter. The March of next year at $5.95, up 10.5 cents. March soybean futures were down 2 today, $14.12 and a quarter, the settlement price. May futures at $14.22 and three quarters, a penny and 3 quarters lower. July beans off a quarter at $14.30 a bushel, and the November beans at $13.48 and a quarter for the new crop, up 6.5. January up 5.5 at $13.50 and a half. March bean meal down $5.70 at $3.79.60. March oil at $57.56, up 30 on the afternoon. The live cattle futures finished the February contract at $107.95, down 70. April at $112.67 and a half, 77 and a half lower. January feeders at $126.35 were up a nickel. The March at $125.55, down 75, and the February lean hogs today up a nickel at $80.32 and a half. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. It is a production of Illinois Public Media from the U of I. Here's what the outside markets look like at this hour. March crude oil futures, $89.13 a barrel, up 42 cents on the afternoon. Ethanol at $2.33 and 2 tenths of a cent, up 9 tenths of a cent. Gas futures, for natural gas that is, at $4.72 and 2 tenths, up 2 and 7 tenths. And the heating oil or diesel fuel at $2.65 and a tenth, up 2 and 7 tenths. Gold futures on the day at $1,341 finished this Friday afternoon, $5.50 lower. And the Dow Jones Industrial Average is just about 60 points higher at this hour at 11,883. The U.S. dollar at 78.2 is up point, or rather down 0.6, and the CRB index at 333.95 is up 2.05 on the afternoon. Here's what the weather forecast looks like as it comes from the National Weather Service. They say the skies this afternoon should be mostly cloudy in Urbana-Champaign. A high near just, 11 degrees. The wind chill between 2 and 7. West winds around 6 miles an hour. Tonight, those winds will calm down. Snow will be likely this evening. It'll be cloudy. A low of 9 degrees. The wind chill values between minus 2 and 3 above. There'll be calm winds out of the south at 4 to 7. Chance of precip in the area this evening, just about 60%. On Saturday, a 30% chance of snow before noon. Mostly cloudy, a high near 22 degrees. Wind chill values between negative 2 and 8 above. Southwest winds at 7 to 10. And then tomorrow night, mostly cloudy skies, a low of 10. Wind chill values between 0 and 5 above. North-northwest winds between 7 and 9 miles an hour. On Sunday, mostly cloudy skies, a high near 22 again. North-northeast winds then around 7 miles an hour. More on the agricultural weather forecast when we get to the bottom of the hour. And we talk with Steve Hilberg from the Midwestern Regional Climate Center.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Agricultural information is made possible with support from ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers because everything they do starts with you.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. It is a Friday afternoon. On the phone line with us, as usual, is Mike Zuzulo. He's with Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting out of Lafayette, Indiana. Hi, Mike. How are
Hello, you? Todd. How are you?
Well, I'm very good. You get to stay home this afternoon, but you're on Commodity Week with us. I'm looking forward to that. Our guest, by the way, will be Scott Irwin. He's an ag economist here at the U of I. We're going to talk a little bit, actually quite a little bit, about the CFTC proposed rules on speculative trade. That should be a fun one. I'm glad you'll be along with that. And thanks for sending across that report on what OPEC's been up to, too.
Yeah, and it's been interesting that you decided to talk about this with Dr. Irwin. I had seen him a couple weeks ago on CNBC, and he did a terrific job against the other fellow that was talking about the fund trading and the high correlation relationship between speculators right now. And there's good points to be made on both, but it was interesting. One of the big reasons why OPEC in their January report they released this month, they said they weren't going to increase production even though they see increasing crude oil demand. And even though Brent crude oil futures over in London's threatening $100 again, they said that there's too many speculators in the market and that that's part of the reason why the trade is at these price levels. And they did do a pretty compelling job of associating the crude oil price with the net longs of money managers. So I thought that was pretty interesting. Let's see what Dr. Irwin has to say about that.
No, I pass that along to him, so hopefully he'll get a chance to study up on that question, and we'll talk about it during Commodity Week. You can hear it on our website at willag.org after 4:30 this evening, or rather after 6 o'clock this evening. We record at 4:30. But let's get on to the subject at hand, of course, which are the futures markets in Chicago. Let's start with the cattle on feed report. Do you have the numbers in front of you? They were released at 2 o'clock this afternoon.
I do indeed. The placements came in at 116. The marketings came in at 105. And the on-feed January 1 came in at 105 as well. All three of those on the top end of the ranges.
And that'll be higher for the marketplace, or lower, rather, for the marketplace on Monday, you think?
I think it'll be kind of mixed, a mixed bag, I think, Todd. And corn's going to play a big role in this because with those numbers all being on the high end, that's pretty friendly, the corn market, in terms of domestic feed utilization staying strong into the first half of 2011. I think the marketing's numbers supported the fat cattle. If I had to guess, I would think that probably the feeders may want to come down some and correct a little bit more after these numbers and after the technicals started to give a little bit more of a sell signal in the charts at the end of the week here. It's been interesting because the feeder market has been running up with the corn market, and that's kind of contra-fundamental unless you have really tight supplies of cattle or hogs. And it's been more like a 1996-type market where the livestock have tried to run up with the grains. But I'm wondering whether this market report here and this cattle on feed report may not try to cause a divergence between those two. So that's what I'll be looking out for on Monday.
And then some other items that are in the news beyond what we just heard on that release. U.S. EPA today said, hey, it's okay to run E15 in vehicles that were built in this century.
And that was an interesting thing because from a standpoint of getting that announcement before the opening and then seeing on top of that a really strong weekly export sales number across the board for all three of the main grains, I would have thought that the trade would have opened a lot higher, but it did not, except in the wheat. Corn and beans really struggled the first half of the day until those Informa numbers came out. And when I talked to Chicago contacts this morning about the EPA numbers especially, they continue to say, well, part of that was built in, and it's a long way from getting us to actually pumping E15 into vehicles from 2001 to 2006 at the gas pumps. This is one of several hurdles, several steps, and it's going to be a long, drawn-out process to get that demand actually increased. So that was kind of how they measured this news announcement and why I think they maybe didn't have as big a reaction, especially in terms of the spread trade in the corn market.
And then Informa, you mentioned their numbers. They came out with a forecast of what farmers will plant. They say acreage for corn at 90.9 million acres, and for soybeans at 76.65. I'm thinking about that. Let's see. That soybean number is lower, right? And the corn number is slightly higher, but it's not as high as most believe corn acreage needs to be in order to meet demand.
Yeah, the soybean number is just a hair higher. But I tell you, when I talked to the Chicago contacts about that as well, even though the November bean corn ratio over the last month has been gaining in favor of November beans, the trade was really looking at Informa increasing corn acres quite a bit at the expense of beans because they felt like they came in too low on the corn number in December. So today's report was actually more friendly across the board. The corn number was not as big as the trade was expecting, and the bean number was not as much of a drawdown as they were expecting either. And that really kicked the spreads into high gear. In other words, the front-end markets, the March, May, and July, both lost in corn and beans to the new crop. And so we had a lot of spread trading after the middle part of the session. I would say almost the vast majority of trade today was spreading. I talked to the contacts after the close. I asked if there was any hedge selling going on, any hedge commercial pressure, especially in the old crop beans with South America getting ready to harvest, and there was not much to be reported. So a lot of speculative trading going on in the spreads today.
The numbers from the United States USDA for 2010 for corn at 88.2 million acres, that's their final figure, and of course Informa at 90.9, and then Informa's number for the soybeans at 76.65. And last year in the United States, U.S. farmers planted 77.4 million acres. So those are the comparison. I think maybe let's move now to the wheat market. That was where a good portion of the action was today. Nearby March futures were up 21 cents, and even the July, the harvest month, was up 13 and a half.
It was. That was a huge day in the wheat. And just to finish up on the Informa numbers, one thing I did notice was they put a corn yield of 163.8 out there. That might be a little high on marginal land, Todd. I think that's one thing that we might want to watch out for. They put the bean yield up around 44.2. That also is a little bit higher than what we're used to dealing with. So they did stoke up the production numbers, even with those acreage numbers being a little bit down. But, yeah, wheat was big today, and it was big ever since the middle of the week when we saw rumor mill talking about China coming in and buying Australian feed wheat. And I talked to a Newswire contact this morning to find out if anything hard had been found out about that as far as hard news, and it's still in the rumor mill column as far as what I can pick up. But that seemed to turn the wheat market nicely midweek. It looked like the wheat corn spread then gave a technical reversal and a technical buy in favor of the wheat after that Wednesday trade. We then got the export sales this morning of greater than 1 million metric tons, and our number one buyer on those export sales was Turkey. So we had a huge contingency of Middle Eastern buying this week. Turkey, Jordan, Tunisia, and Algeria were all in for large, large quantities. Finally, the other thing I think that really turned the wheat on and did not allow it to really break back much going into today's close was National Weather Service came out with their long-term outlook. They talked about La Nina. They talked about the extended outlook because of La Nina being very dry into spring, early summer. I think that brought back some of the weather bowls when it comes to the southern plains.
Can I take you back to the USDA data user group meeting last fall? There was comment made by Jerry Bangi from the World Agricultural Outlook Board at that point that said he thought, and this is very unusual, but that he thought wheat would be the place that that needed to be watched, in particular wheat as that crop comes on in Ukraine and Russia. Of course, the areas that you talked about that were the importers of U.S. wheat today would all have been primarily, I believe, importers of wheat from the former Soviet bloc countries.
Right, exactly right. That or Europe, you bet.
Yeah, so the question is, do we have much information on what the overwintering has been like in Ukraine and Russia and how that their soft red winter, let's see, it'd be their winter wheat future, their winter wheat that would be the one that would be of most concern, I believe.
I know earlier this week, I believe it was Strategies Grains. They're a really good French analytical firm, and I've been dealing with them a long time. And I know that earlier this week they came in and lowered their acreage estimate for the European Union as a whole because of the rough planting and the rough start that the European Union got this past fall. So Europe and China and the United States, the whole northern hemisphere practically, as far as winter wheat supply side, are all under some duress right now, either due to lack of moisture and or very cold temperatures. And I think the largest province, I believe, in China is Henan, that in terms of winter wheat production, and they do something like 60 or 65% of all the winter wheat in the Chinese country. And I think they continue to be under a lot of stress. And when you hear that rumor mill about the Australian feed wheat buying, I think that adds to it.
All right. Thank you so much for taking time with us today.
Have a great weekend, Todd. Talk to you later, sir.
You betcha. That is Mike Zuzulo. He's with Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting out of Lafayette, Indiana. Joins us here on this Friday afternoon of the Closing Market Report, and he'll be alongside this afternoon when we record Commodity Week at 4:30, posted to our website at just about 6 o'clock this evening at willag.org. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. It is a Friday afternoon. You know, over the next 3 months, the prices for corn and soybeans have two major objectives. I'll have a report with ag economist Darrell Good. First of all, prices must allocate the remaining old crop supplies to maintain at least pipeline stocks by the end of the current marketing year, says University of Illinois ag economist Darrell Good. Secondly, he says, prices must direct spring planting decisions. It means prices of corn and soybeans must be high enough to cause two things: usage to slow down and acreage to go up. Good is in the camp that soybeans may have reached the first of the two objectives.
It appears that soybean prices have increased enough to ration current supplies, but corn prices have not. The prospects for both very tight year-ending stocks of corn and soybeans and a continuation of strong demand implies that 2011 crops need to be large. More acreage of both crops in the U.S. may be needed to meet projected consumption levels at reasonable prices and to start rebuilding domestic stocks to a more acceptable level.
Planted acreage of all crops in the U.S. declined by 8.3 million acres from 2008 to 2010, says Good. He writes the same on the FarmDoc website at www.farmdoc.illinois.edu. He goes on to say that at the same time as this planted acreage decline, acreage enrolled in the Conservation Reserve Program declined too, by 3.4 million acres. These changes suggest that as much as 11.7 million acres of additional cropland, including double-cropped acres, may be available for planting in 2011.
Of that total, 3.7 million has already been planted to winter wheat. Double-cropped acreage of soybeans following wheat could also increase by 2 million acres. That leaves 6 million acres for additional planting of spring crops. Soybeans may not require any of that acreage due to increased double cropping. Assuming that corn consumption remains near 13.4 million bushels, that year-ending stocks need to expand by at least 500 million bushels, and that the 2011 average corn yield is near the trend of 159 bushels, most of that 6 million acres needs to be planted to corn.
Well, based on this need to reduce the pace of consumption and to aggressively expand acreage, corn prices, believes Darrell Good, likely need to remain high in absolute terms and relative to other crop prices for an extended period. Up next, the extension specialist from the University of Illinois campus. We're on the road last week at the Corn and Soybean Classic series of meetings. They were in Quincy on Thursday. I caught up with Mike Gray there, extension entomologist, and talked to him a bit about the future of BT corn resistance management. From the 2011 edition of the Corn and Soybean Classic series, I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason. Extension entomologist from Illinois, Mike Gray, now joins us to take a look at a roadmap, or at least what he calls kind of a roadmap for resistance management for the Western corn rootworm. It's been his discussion over these series of meetings. Mike, talk to me about the roadmap, what you see coming, how it might develop from the industry and the government side.
Well, one of the possibilities as growers move forward this coming season is the flexibility to use some hybrids, some BT hybrids that fall into that Optimum AcreMax 1 or Optimum AcreMax rootworm lineup, and with those particular hybrids, they can utilize the so-called refuge-in-a-bag approach, the seed mixture approach. For rootworm, that represents a 10% refuge directly in that bag. Now, growers who go down that road, they still have to utilize a separate refuge for the European corn borer. But certainly for the rootworm, they do have that flexibility. It ensures compliance. Producers like that flexibility as well in terms of being able to just pour seed into their planters and go. Downside, there are some who look at this approach and wonder if it might be a concern with regard to durability. You know, is this a strategy where we're going? And from my perspective, I do think long term, I think we're going to see the seed mixture approach, particularly with pyramided BT hybrids. I think that'll be the approach that becomes sort of the standard resistance management plan. Now, that's my opinion, but I think that's where we're headed with refuge management for not only corn rootworm, but for an increasing share of other insect pests in corn.
Pyramided hybrids is nomenclature producers may not be familiar with. They've heard of stacked hybrids. Can you talk about the difference between the two?
Yes, the pyramided BT hybrids, we have hybrids that express multiple CRI proteins targeted at, say, corn rootworm. They also would produce multiple CRI proteins targeted at many of the lepidopterans. And so because of the broad range of CRI proteins that are being expressed by these plants, they bind at different sites, different binding sites on the insect midguts, thereby increasing the longevity, the durability of that particular BT hybrid. Unlike stack hybrids, which may express one CRI protein for corn rootworm and another CRI protein for our lepidopterans versus the multiple CRI proteins for each of those different target groups. So they are distinctly different. I think we'll have more pyramided BT hybrids enter the landscape over the next several years. And along with that, I think increasing registrations for a broad range of hybrids utilizing the seed mixture approach.
And finally, as you look further into the future, a pyramided hybrid, we've gone from a 20% refuge currently, which is still in use, to potentially a refuge in a bag, which will be available this season at 10%. Will that shrink even more?
Well, I think so. I think as, again, more pyramided BT hybrids are registered for use, I think over time we'll see that refuge reduce to that 5% level that you mentioned. And as I've indicated to many of our audience at the Classics, you know, 3, 4, 5 years from now, I fully anticipate standing before many of these groups and talking about that 95-5 landscape for, you know, BT usage in the Corn Belt of the U.S.
We've been talking to University of Illinois Extension entomologist Mike Gray from the Quincy Corn and Soybean Classic. I'm Todd Gleason. I'll return in just a couple of minutes with today's agricultural weather forecast.
The 21st annual All-Day Agricultural Outlook meeting is sure to attract a crowd. Among those presenting March 8th at the Beef House in Covington, Indiana, Murray Wise from Murray Wise Associates, Joe Vaklovic from MF Global, Roy Huckabee from the Lind Group, and Tom Fritz from EFG. Avoid the long registration line by calling 800-528-7980. The cost of the ticket is $20 and includes a continental breakfast and lunch. When you register with your major credit card, we'll mail your tickets good for our VIP line. The number to call is 800-528-7980. It's National Granola Bar Day, and it's also International Hot and Spicy Food Day. It was John Harvey Kellogg who coined the word granola for a whole grain and nut mixture, but he never marketed the product. It was a rival, Charles Post, who once was a patient at Kellogg's Battle Creek Sanitarium, that would eventually market his own granola mix. He called it grape nuts. On this day in agricultural history in 1743, John Fitch was born. An American pioneer of steamboat transportation, he produced some of the nation's first serviceable steamboats. His first was an odd-looking machine. It was driven by a rack of American Indian canoe paddles, and the ship traveled at 6 to 8 miles an hour. In 1930, H.L. Collender died, an English physicist. He spent his life studying the thermodynamic properties of steam, but it was his son Guy who discovered the linkage between climate change and increases in carbon dioxide resulting from the burning of carbon fuels, part of the greenhouse effect. And in 1912, Conrad Bloch was born. He discovered that high levels of cholesterol in the bloodstream cause fatty deposits on the inner walls of arteries, which may lead to constricted blood flow and increase the chances of blood clotting and heart attack. And that's this day in agricultural history.
Support for the Closing Market Report comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report on a Friday afternoon. I'm Yovi Extension's Todd Gleason. On the phone line with us to take a look at the weather forecast is the director of the Midwestern Regional Climate Center, funded in part by NOAA. His name, of course, Steve Hilberg. Thanks, Steve, for taking the time with us today.
Yeah, good afternoon, Todd.
It's just mere 6 degrees outside at this point, and it was really cold overnight. Is that the coldest night that we'll have in this period?
What you mean today? Yeah, it looks like we're going to be we're set up for some cold weather over the next week or two. Bottom line, I think our January thaw was last weekend. We're going to stay pretty cold here in the Midwest and Illinois for the next week to 10 days. We'll warm up a little bit over this weekend with this next system coming through, but it looks like toward the end of next week, we could get another big plunge of Arctic air into the central part of the country, into the plains, and then moving over the Midwest. So I would be hard-pressed to say that this is going to be the coldest we're going to get this year, and looks like winter is going to continue for a couple of weeks at least without much of a break.
Well, I kind of meant the few days here. That was really pretty cold last night. Do we have anything that cold over the weekend?
No, actually, we'll see temperatures coming up a little bit tonight in the advance of the next system, and we'll be below normal for the next week or so, but temperatures probably won't get as cold as they were last night. With the systems moving through, we'll have some clouds. There'll be some winds that tend to keep the air mixed. Last night, we just sort of had the perfect situation of clearing skies and winds actually dying down early this morning. So we had some areas down in, in south central Illinois, they got down as low as 11 and 12 degrees below zero. So we're not likely to see that for several more days, at least probably next weekend at the earliest.
And then you've got this Arctic blast coming in. How is this being set up? What's the process that's making the cold come into our area other than...
We've really just pretty much been in this, locked in this pattern. There's a large high over Greenland, which has been blocking the weather pattern, and a huge low over the Arctic and central Canada. And it intensifies and waxes and wanes a little bit as the days go on. But periodically we get this trough sharpening up, and then that drives the cold air southward. And that looks like what's going to happen towards the latter half of next week into the following week when that trough sharpens and we get another shot of very cold air down out of Canada into the central U.S. So we just haven't had a huge intensification like that in a while, and we're still in the middle of winter, so it's bound to happen.
Thank you so much for being with us today, Steve.
All right, Todd, have a good one.
You too. Steve Hilberg is the director of the Midwestern Regional Climate Center. He joins us here on the Closing Market Report on a Friday afternoon. You can hear him again, if you'd like, on our website at willag.org. Commodity Week will be there, too. Our guest this week, Scott Irwin. He's a professor of agricultural economics right here at the University of Illinois. We'll take up the CFTC's proposed rules on managing trade in the commodity markets. Commodity Week, it's our weekly look at what's happening in the world of agriculture.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 90 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, crop and life insurance protection, and programs for young and beginning farmers.